Hello, this is Dee Feikert with the Decatur Herald and Review for October 7th, 2015. We'll begin today's reading from the front page with the article entitled "Child Care Advocates Turn Up Volume on Proposed Cuts." This is out of Springfield. Parents, child care workers, and advocates amped up their fight Tuesday over Governor Bruce Rauner's bid to cut state daycare subsidies. At a hearing in a Capitol Complex auditorium, opponents of the Republican governor's proposed changes said the new guidelines will keep daycare out of financial reach for thousands of Illinois low-income families. Without assistance, parents are losing or quitting their jobs. The governor is punishing them, said Penny Driver, owner of Teddy Bear Christian Daycare in Riverton. The hearing is part of a multi-step process as Rauner tries to implement a money-saving plan that will raise the threshold for daycare subsidies. Opponents say parents earning more than $664 per month are no longer eligible for the subsidy. Previously, a parent with one child could earn up to $2,456 per month. Since the rule went into effect, daycare owners say they have had to turn away dozens of families seeking daycare for their children. Dawn Meyer, owner of 17 Rogies Learning Centers in central Illinois and the Chicago area, said she allowed 163 children who previously used the subsidy to stay enrolled even though her company is no longer receiving money for the subsidy from the state. "We wanted to keep these families working," Meyer said. But she said she is no longer accepting families who would have qualified under the old guidelines, and she has laid off 31 teachers because of the drop in the number of children being served. "The effects of these changes are devastating," said Ceci Nyman of Illinois Action for Children. "The state of Illinois should rescind these rules." Rauner spokeswoman Lindsay Walters said Democrats need to work with the governor to put a series of structural reforms on the books. Democrats say Rauner's proposals are anti-union, pro-business, and would hurt the middle class. "In the absence of structural reforms, difficult decisions are being made in order to ensure the viability of the programs that serve our state's most vulnerable," Walters said in an email. "The governor has asked for structural reforms to free up resources to balance the budget, help the most vulnerable, and create jobs." Democrats, who control the General Assembly, have attempted to overturn the rules, but thus far have fallen short. The legislature returns to action October 20th and could vote on a plan. Kayla Edwards, regional manager for Express Employment Professionals in Springfield, said the changes are making it harder for her to find people to place in jobs. "Let's be clear. Child care cuts actively hurt local economies. Neighborhood businesses suffer, along with their customers," Edwards said. Our next article is entitled "EIU Looks to Boost Student Recruitment." It is out of Charleston and written by Jared Jarman, Lee News Service writer. Even with lingering problems affecting Eastern Illinois University, its president maintained an air of optimism as he pushed for a focus on admissions and marketing. President David Glassman announced in his State of the University address last week that a big focus for him is to intensify the university's recruitment efforts by putting a sharper focus on admissions and marketing. "At this point, I am reviewing options for reallocation of additional funding to our university, marketing and admission divisions," Glassman said. "Marketing efforts that are tied to student recruitment will be the first priority." Currently, the marketing department runs off of $700,000 annually. Many universities place 1% of the overall budget into marketing. If that were the case for Eastern, the marketing department would be working with $2 million. "We just had to do more with less," said Christy Kilgore, Assistant Director of Marketing and Creative Services. Kilgore said there are a multitude of things that extra funding would allow them to do. Faculty Senate Chairman Jemmy Robertson said he thinks utilizing the faculty more in recruiting would be highly beneficial. I feel like EIU students and EIU faculty can be very valuable recruiting tools, but there's virtually no funds available right now, Robertson said. Chris Dearth, Director of Admissions, said this potential increase could make substantial differences in Eastern's recruitment success. Marketing and admissions are really what drive our revenue, Dearth said. Dearth said officials have been working more heavily with local high schools to interest those students in coming to Eastern. We are intensifying our focus in the local area, Dearth said. We've always recruited this area. We just may not have been as aggressive as we should have been in the past. EIU leaders are increasing on-site admissions programs with local schools within an hour to an hour and a half so that the high school students see the campus. The director, said Effingham, is one place they had tried to be more aggressive with than in the past. Outside of the local areas, Eastern has focused largely on where applications were coming from, which included Chicago and St. Louis. Along with that, they've been honing in on sites where there might not be a large amount of applications, but there are many college-eligible students. He said the university's entire plan revolves around moving students through the process, which starts with getting them on campus. We think if we can get them on campus, we have a better chance to enroll those students, Dearth said. Our next article is entitled Aldi Project Opposition Aired. It's out of Decatur, written by Allison Petty, a Herald and Review staff writer. Residents continued to object Monday in advance of a Decatur City Council vote on whether to rezone land that become a new Aldi store on the city's north side. Four neighbors of the 1.88-acre site near the intersection of West Ash Avenue and U.S. Business 51 voiced concerns about traffic and safety. The council will consider the matter at its October 19th meeting, which will be held in the Decatur Civic Center Theater to accommodate what is expected to be a large crowd. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf promised the residents that the council takes the matter very seriously. It's the really hardest type of decision any council has to make, is trying to balance the neighborhood versus development, she said. Under the plan, Aldi would close its store on Pershing Road and attempt to sell that building. At 18,000 square feet, the new store would be roughly 3,000 square feet larger. Aldi representatives have said the company wants to locate its new store on the north side of town. Ed Flynn, an attorney representing the developers, told the Decatur Plan Commission last month that Forsyth officials had reiterated the community's interest in the project. Neighbors have strenuously objected to the proposal at several public meetings since it was announced. Resident Mike Dawson said he was concerned that the plan would involve turning a parking lane into a traffic lane, putting the sidewalk within inches of cars traveling by. It's just going to be a terrible situation, he said. I can't think of a better word than quagmire. Julie Bresnan, whose house is across the street from the proposed development, asked the council to visit the area before voting. Just see what's really going on before you make your decision in 2 weeks, she said. In other business, the council amended city code related to liquor sales downtown. In the rest of the city, businesses that primarily sell alcohol are not allowed within 500 feet of churches or schools. City staff recommended reducing the distance to 100 feet in the downtown area. Councilman Bill Faber made a motion to postpone the vote, saying he thought churches and schools should be consulted. No one seconded the motion, and the five other council members voted in favor of the change. Our next article is entitled Budget Impasse Cuts Services for Abuse Victims. It's an AP selection out of Chicago. Assistance for battered women and children statewide is dwindling because of Illinois' budget impasse, and it could have long-lasting consequences according to state-funded organizations that help domestic violence victims. A Southern Illinois shelter offering protection to families in emergencies has closed its doors. The head of a Chicago group that provides counseling is working without pay, a strategy that directors at a Centralia organization have also used. Other nonprofits are laying off employees, blowing through reserves or borrowing money to keep up with rent, payroll, and utilities as the state enters its fourth month without an approved spending plan. For most nonprofit groups and agencies, the backbone of Illinois' social services network, late payments for services and budget cuts have become business as usual. But veteran advocates say the pure uncertainty of the current situation is unprecedented and hits rural areas particularly hard. There's no sign that legislative Democrats and Republican Governor Bruce Rauner are close to a deal, and hardly anyone knows what a new budget would look like for the cash-strapped state. "We're just hanging on," said Tallien Ray, a director of People Against Violent Environments in Centralia. The Southeastern Illinois organization, which offers frontline services like legal assistance for protective orders in five counties, shuts its door for 2 months. It was later paid for services provided last year and now operates on a limited basis to stretch dollars. Ray takes crisis hotline calls at home. Much of her time has been unpaid. Attention to the budget's ripple effects spiked Thursday with rallies in Chicago and Springfield where advocates called for a solution. Democrats want Rauner to sign off on tax increases because the state is billions of dollars in debt, but Rauner first wants pro-business reforms. In the meantime, Illinois is spending an unsustainable rates due to state statutes and court orders, though a few areas, like domestic abuse services, remain in limbo without a budget. As a result, a safe place, with facilities in Zion and Waukegan, has turned away those seeking emergency shelter. It can only afford to operate 9 of its 35 beds and has scaled back on counseling that helps women in the far northeastern part of the state escape abuse. The situation is especially tough in southern Illinois, home to some of the state's poorest counties. The closure of a single facility can amplify a dangerous domestic situation, advocates say, providing women fewer options and further distances to drive. Those who've provided social service for years warn such hardships could contribute to higher unemployment, violence, and long-term psychological problems. The Effingham-based nonprofit Stopping Women Abuse Now, Incorporated, gets most of its $1.3 million operating budget from the state. It has closed two shelters, one for domestic abuse victims and one for homeless people, an hour away in Olney, according to Executive Director Linda Bookwalter. She said there are few opportunities to fundraise. "We're a rural area. We're not where there are large companies who can give us big grants," she said. "We struggle." There's also the added worry of having to trim staff and what that will mean for those still employed. Yesenia Maldonado, the executive director of Chicago-based Between Friends, said she's working without a paycheck. "Unless there's a budget deal, the avenues of relief are few. A bill authorizing roughly $2 billion in social services spending has been approved by the Senate and awaits House consideration, though it isn't clear whether Rauner would sign off. Lawmakers return to Springfield on October 20th. A Chicago Democrat who sits on a Human Services Committee estimated that up to 75,000 people could be impacted in some way without domestic violence services. "We need revenue," Senator Heather Steens said. But Rauner spokeswoman Lindsay Walters said structural reforms will free up resources to help the most vulnerable. Unfortunately, the majority party continues to block the governor's reforms, she said in a statement. The back and forth is especially troubling to Myra Sarabia, who left an abusive marriage more than a decade ago. The Chicago mother of three turned to state-subsidized services to file a protective order and pay for child care so she could work and afford to move out. Now an advocate, she reflects on what it would be like without the state's help. I don't know if I would be here, she said. Our next article is entitled Trappers Catch Attention with Decatur Convention. It is by Emily Steele, an H&R staff writer, and it's out of Decatur. Even with his whole body weight stepping on the levers, 5-year-old Waylon Hemp couldn't set the coyote trap. But with patience, persistence, and some help from a nearby adult, Waylon managed to set 5 traps, which put a big smile on his face. The Illinois Trappers Association held its annual convention at the Macon County Fairground for the first time this weekend. Vendors from 10 states set up tables to sell traps, bait, and other equipment, and each building was filled with the pungent, musky smell of a variety of animal scents that filled countless bottles. It's a one-stop shop, said convention coordinator Kent Wheel of Springfield. Anything a trapper needs, he can get at this convention. Illinois is home to about 10,000 licensed trappers who are gearing up for the start of the season in November. The association is just shy of 1,400 members, about half of whom live within a 2-hour drive of Decatur, according to Wheel. The convention and membership meeting that was Friday were a chance for them to come together, learn from each other through demonstrations, and recruit people to the trade. We're a happy-go-lucky bunch, said the association's president, Neil Graves, but people don't know what to make of us. Graves said there's a lot of history in trapping, and he's proud of that, but the industry has changed a lot in the past 50 years. For most, trapping for fur is not a way to make a living, especially with recent slow sales in the big Chinese and Russian markets. The number one question I hear about trapping is, people still do that? New this year was the focus on children. While the internet has helped make getting into trapping easier, the younger generations aren't getting involved. You still have to have somebody who gets the kids started and gives them that spark, Wheel said. We're trying hard to get young people. Kelly Hemp of Champaign watched as her sons practiced for the Kids Trapping Setting Contest in the children's area. Her husband is a trapper, and their children, Wyatt, 7, and Waylon, 5, are following in his footsteps. They've been going out trapping since he was 1, she pointed to Wyatt. The judges and volunteers spent time showing everyone how to set each of the 5 metal traps safely before the contest. We're trying to teach them the proper way. You never want to put your hand in here, said Judge Scott Clemma, pointing to the piece that would trigger the trap to close. When the judges gave the signal, the kids rushed to set their traps. The adults cautioned them to do it right, not just fast, even though none of the traps were strong enough to cause a serious injury. If there's a trapper and he says he's never been caught by a trap, he's lying, Clemma said, on several occasions when the trap snapped early. Hemp said teaches her boys patience and a respect for nature. I prefer this over them sitting on the couch playing video games, Hemp said. I love that they're into this. Doran Miller of Missouri led a demonstration on castor, a liquid from beaver's glands that's used in perfumes and as a food additive. There's a lot of different things we use that a lot of people don't know, he said. Miller said there are a lot of stereotypes about trappers that are untrue. Traps with teeth have been illegal for years, and Miller said new traps are more humane for wildlife. Today we're always studying our equipment because we're looking for the best possible outcome, Miller said. The presentation on the newly proposed bobcat trapping regulations was one of the more popular events. Last year, lawmakers removed the 40-year prohibition, and the first season will be in 2016. This came about in part after the Illinois Department of Natural Resources studied the state's bobcat population size, but the state budget crisis has pulled funding for that and reduced the number of conservation officers. What they're doing with the DNR hurts, There's no money for research, Wheel said. The next article is out of Mattoon by Jared Jarman Lee News Service, entitled Coles County Students Tour Manufacturing Plants with Rauner. High school students from Coles County took time out of school Friday to see a few of the manufacturing jobs the area has to offer. About 138 students from Charleston, Oakland, Mattoon, and Pathway Program toured the Coles County Memorial Airport, as well as the Mars Pet Care, Consolidated Communications, and Mattoon Precision Manufacturing Incorporated facilities for the state's first Manufacturing Day. On these tours, students were taught how things operate in each of the manufacturing facilities. Angela Griffin, Coles Together president, said it is important to show students there are career options in manufacturing, and manufacturing facilities need people with training to handle the high-tech equipment within the facility. It was stressed that these positions were available, and employers need skilled, trained workers in their plants. Griffin said there's been a skills gap in the past 3 to 4 years that has stifled and hurt manufacturing in the area. She said employers are looking for people to hire, but people are either unaware of the jobs out there or they do not have the necessary skills. Governor Bruce Rauner, who attended a tour of the Mattoon Precision facility, said it is important to celebrate manufacturing and support it, especially with 10% of the state workforce involved in manufacturing. Rauner added that manufacturing in Illinois should thrive, and the state should not seek ways that hinder its growth. Glenn Pruitt, Mattoon Precision Vice President of Operations, said the workforce right now is not equipped to do what we do here. Pruitt added there are jobs, just not the qualified people to fill those jobs. Griffin said this kind of event allows area manufacturers to show the ins and outs of the job and encourage students graduating from high school to either jump into manufacturing jobs or get trained at a place such as Lakeland College and get a more specialized education to use in manufacturing. People are going to college and studying in areas that do not equip them to go into manufacturing, Griffin said. Lakeland College President Joss Bullock said it is important to the county that the manufacturing is thriving with a more qualified pool in the workforce. We are so dependent on manufacturing. In Coles County, about 35% of our employee base is manufacturing-driven. This includes not only people on the floor making products, but also people involved in such jobs as sales and accounting. The next article is an AP feed by Gail Marks Jarvis from the Chicago Tribune. Investment envelopes likely to arrive filled with red ink. Beware of the mail that's arriving from your 401k or other investment accounts. If you open it, red ink is likely to pour out of the envelope and may soil your view of your financial future. Almost any mutual fund or exchange-traded fund that contains stocks became a loser in the third quarter of this year. The average fund that invests in the stocks of large U.S. companies lost about 7.5% during the last 3 months, and funds that invest in small company stocks plunged about 11%, according to Morningstar. To add insult to injury, if you believed in the popular themes of the last couple of years, the hurt has probably been worse than it had to be. Your protection from stock market losses during the last 3 months would have been to own a sizable portion of U.S. Treasury bonds, but the theme of the last few months has been to dump those bond funds because they were expected to become losers. Many advisors were convinced that the Federal Reserve was about to start raising interest rates in September, and those interest rates increases would have been harsh on Treasury bond funds, turning them into losers. But it didn't happen. The Federal Reserve instead looked at the dangers building in the global economy and decided the risks could infect the U.S. Already, U.S. company profits are hurting from global pressures and turning stocks of industrial, technology, energy, and basic material companies into losers. So the Fed continued to keep interest rates near zero. As a result, U.S. Treasury bonds and the mutual funds that contain them ended up climbing in value, not losing. The average mutual fund that invests in long-term U.S. Treasury bonds climbed about 5.7% during the last 3 months. The funds did exactly what they were intended to do in portfolios, to provide protection for investors during times of worry in the stock market. And the bond funds that investors added to portfolios when they were worried about rising interest rates turned out to damage, not protect investors. High-yield bonds, a popular choice for people weary of low interest rates and worried about the Federal Reserve, got smacked last quarter right along with stocks. High-yield bond funds invest in the bonds sold by struggling U.S. companies. The funds inflicted losses of 4.5% because struggling companies are dangerous when the economy is weak. Under such circumstances, struggling companies have trouble selling products and can end up failing to pay bond investors back on their high-yield or junk investments. The plunge in high-yield bonds could be a rude awakening for investors who thought bonds would protect them from stock market troubles. Typically, high-yield bonds act like stocks, falling in value when worries about the economy build. Meanwhile, another theme of the last few years injured investors greatly. Emerging markets were believed by many advisors to be the area of the world that would gain considerably as countries like China, Brazil, and Russia modernized and grew. But this year, the trend of fast growth went into reverse. China's economy is growing far less than the last few years, and Brazil and Russia are in recessions. Consequently, emerging market mutual funds that invest in developing areas, such as Asia and Latin America, have turned into a disaster. Emerging markets, on average, lost 18% last quarter and 20% during the last year, according to Morningstar. Funds that invest specifically in Latin American countries have been even worse because many countries, like Brazil and Venezuela, depend on selling oil and basic materials to the rest of the world. With the second largest economy in the world, China, slowing, Latin American companies haven't been able to sell the quantities of oil and basic materials that they must to Asia. Latin American stocks plunged 23% last quarter and 38% for the year. Developed areas of the world, such as Europe and Japan, didn't encounter nearly the same level of losses, but Europe is down about 10% and Japan down about 13%. In the U.S. stock market, the only winning fund type during the last quarter was those that invested in utility stocks. The funds climbed 3% as people chose an industry that's favored as a defensive play during risky times. Another supposedly defensive choice, healthcare companies, plunged 11% when presidential candidate Hillary Clinton called for drug price regulation. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.